Hello, everybody, on Blind Cool Tech and on my podcast. Following is a 2.5 hour Star Trek chat. This really was a lot of fun. Now, I'm going to leave the sample rate and the bit rate and everything just as it was, as it came out of the software, because it was recorded at a rather odd setting, and I don't want to have any distortion. The size of the file was about 33 meg, so it's not that big. The bit rate was 32K. This is a mono file, and the sample rate was 16K. But I think for just the fact that this was a voice chat, that it did quite well. During the chat, I had mentioned the possibility of putting a list of words at the end of the chat with the correct spellings, but I decided not to do that, because we covered a few of them within the chat itself. So I think I'm just going to let the chat end. I'm going to edit out some of the pauses, and there is a particularly long pause near the end where I closed it out and somebody had an additional comment or question. So I'm going to keep the comment or question in there, but I'm going to edit out the pause between my closing statement and what the person said. So that's primarily the only editing I'm going to do here. I'm going to try to normalize some of the volume levels and see if I can get them up to what the rest of the chat volume is. I'm not going to do very much of that, though, because I think there are maybe one or two people that their volume levels weren't quite the same as the rest of the chat. But I don't know if my normalizing is going to work, so I may end up just leaving everything as it is. I really want to thank the participants. And this is not the entire list. I seem to remember somebody named Beverly who was on here and someone else who came in later in the chat. I made a list of all the people near the beginning of the chat who were in it. And the names that I have are Doris, Dr. Wibble, Gary, Gail, Jamie D., Josh, Kelly Saperja, Shane Christensen, and as I said, there was someone named Beverly who came in, and there was also some individual who came in later on, and then, of course, there were people who sort of came and went as the chat went on and progressed. So I really want to thank everybody. It was absolutely terrific, and without any further delay, here we go. Okay, Groove, it looks like we're starting to record here, so I'm gonna look at the list in Braille. I can't do it while I'm holding down control, so I'll look at it and just say who's here, unless somebody already knows.
I used to have all the episodes of Next Generation. I recorded them on video, but I think I've lost them over the years, or the videos have gone bad or whatever, but I recorded those faithfully when they were on the weeknight they were on. I can't remember which night now, but I remembered recording those.
I actually have all the episodes in MP3 of Next Generation, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine. And I actually got them from Netflix, and I used a DVD audio extractor to rip them, convert them to WAV files, and then to convert them to MP3s and put them in folders in the hard drive. It took a good 6 or 7 months to get my whole collection together. And then I added the first 8 Star Trek movies, put them in MP3. And then I got another hard drive because I had to reformat, and I didn't want to take the chance of losing everything that I collected, so I got another hard drive. So I actually have 2 copies of all this stuff, and also I have all my programs and stuff on that hard drive too, so I don't lose anything.
You know, one thing I must admit I'm a little disappointed with in terms of the movies is, when it comes to the descriptive video companies, I'm surprised that no one else has done movies 3, 7, 8, 9, and 10. 7 being, of course, Generations, 8 being First Contact, etc. I'm just amazed that that no one has done that yet. I know that 2, 4, 5, and 6, and also the original motion picture one is out, but Wonder why they have to do it that way.
Yeah, that was one of my big gripes too. This is Mary, and I was really mad when they didn't do number three, because that was when they brought Spock back, you know? And you wanted to know more of how they did it. And it was so frustrating, because you're sitting there going, what's happening? What's happening? What's happening? And you don't know, you know? And that's true with a lot of... I'm noticing that now, especially with Star Trek Enterprise, because I'm watching it from Netflix, and in fact, I bought the whole four-season series of it, because I liked it so much. But the problem is, it's so visual that you don't get the summaries of stuff that happened. They just jump right into the episode, and you have to sort of dig your way out and try to figure out what's going on with it. It's getting a lot more visual these days.
Yeah, I think that's very strange. I mean, what's up with them skipping movies? It's just sort of weird. I wonder what made them think, well, we better just skip three, and then, of course, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, etc.
Well, don't feel bad. I mean, there's other movies, too, that are having that problem. Look at Jurassic Park. They've got the first and the third movies out, but not number two. And I really wanted to see that one. Arr!
I wonder how they decide what gets described and what doesn't, and why would they skip a movie. I wonder what makes them, how they figure what gets described.
Maybe it's got something to do with their copyright laws or something, but they're not real considerate of their blind fans, and there's a lot of blind Star Trek folks out there.
Maybe it has to do with they don't have enough funding to describe all the movies, or, again, it could be a popularity thing. It could be how popular the show is based on whether they want to describe it or not.
I mean, with the shows, I think Voyager and Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, Sky Television in the UK has done some audio description, but I mean, not nearly all the episodes either. And I haven't been able to figure out, like, you know, if they went by anything. It seems to be totally random, like which episodes got like audio description and which ones didn't.
I think The Wrath of Khan is in DVS. Because we have it in our local library here in the Great Ridge River Regional Library in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And I've heard it on being audio described through DVS. And it sounded quite good.
Yeah, they do have it. I bought the Star Trek movies that are described, and they're done really well. But the problem is, I don't think that people outside the U.S. can get them. So yeah, that Doris who was just speaking about the movies...
No, I was not speaking about the movies. I was speaking about the television series. And in the UK, like Sky, I think that's... Oh man, I think it's... Well, I mean, at least it's a pay-for channel. They have done some audio descriptions of, like, Next Generation, DS9, and Voyager. But it's, like, only a few episodes have audio descriptions, and it seems to be random which one of the ones are described.
Wow, that's interesting. So you can actually get some episodes described. That's neat.
I didn't realize that either. Enterprise was kind of hard for me to follow, but my husband, who can see, described a lot to me. Otherwise, and I got to where I knew the voices after a while, too, so I could kind of put two and two together with some things.
Yeah, it's weird when you get used to a certain... You get used to, say, Next Generation, then you move on to Deep Space Nine, and you have to get used to a whole different cast of characters and trying to figure out who's who. And it's kind of fun. It makes it more interesting when you finally are able to recognize the voices and put them with names.
Yeah, that's a whole subject in itself, is getting used to the voices. I just went through that with Enterprise, because I just started renting it from Netflix, I guess, about a month and a half ago. But what I did was, as I said, I ended up buying them. And, boy, they sure rack up the prices on those things. If you buy them, see if you can get them used. Because, you know, if you bought the whole Star Trek with all the series and all the movies, you know, the Ultimate Collection, that runs you into thousands of bucks. And there's got to be a way that you can get a used version that looks just like new, that's sold for a big discount. But anyway, yeah, the voices were really hard on Enterprise. It took me about 5 or 6 episodes to figure out who was who. And the big challenge was who was it, Travis, I think, the black guy, and Tucker, the guy that's from the South, has kind of a Southern accent. I still get those two confused. Just can't get them straight.
Well, that's interesting. With Enterprise, I mean, I have not nearly seen all the Orange Force, because I'm not even sure if they aired over here, and then it would be dubbed. But the ones I've seen, there was only really one episode where I needed my husband's peacefully decided to help. What that had started out was like 10, 15 minutes where there was only like music and sound effects and hardly any talking. And with the voices, I mean, I kind of sort of got them down, but yeah, I didn't know this more in detail that one of the guys was black, since I was totally blind, and I don't think my husband happened to mention that detail to me. But I actually found Enterprise of the new series the most easy to follow, because like some of the songs, it reminds me a lot. I mean, I go back to the original series, and that's the one I like best. And I actually found that, like, with sound effects and everything, I found that it reminded me most of the original series. And so I found that fairly easy to listen to, like, you know, without having someone describe it to me. But, the voices are always hard.
I've only personally just seen the premiere episode of Enterprise, and I wasn't really that impressed. But then again, we didn't have that on our local TV channel. Like, we don't have cable, or at least I don't. But my brother, I guess he's watched all the series Enterprise, and we were sort of talking about that a while ago, and he said he didn't really think it was that impressive. Something about they didn't really go into a lot of, you know, character development or something, you know, about the characters. But when you were talking about the videos and DVDs and whatnot, that's the thing I really like about those DVDs is the documentaries. It's just amazing listening to how they do all this stuff, and, you know, getting an idea of, you know, how the cast felt, you know, about certain things and whatnot. Those, in my opinion, are great, you know. For example, on Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, I borrowed it on DVD, and they had a great segment there about Christopher Plummer, who played General Chang, and you know, his experience in the making of the movie, and I thought that was really good.
Oh yeah, I love those documentary type behind the scenes things as well. I think I saw one. It was in Star Trek. Oh my word, I call myself a fan. I can't remember. Star Trek 3, I believe, where Kirk's son dies. And he says that when they, you know, when they started shooting the scene, Kirk hit his one of his boots caught on the ledge of the place where he was standing, and he fell back right as he heard that his son was dead. Well, at first they were gonna thought about editing that out and doing it over, you know, so he wouldn't show him falling. But then he said, no, you know, keep that in there. That is so realistic, and it's such a great reaction. And so he really thought that was cool.
Yeah, I remember reading about that in Star Trek Movie Memories. That's a book from William Shatner about the movies there. One that I remember very well was another one from Star Trek VI. They were sort of doing a tribute to DeForest Kelly, you know, who played Dr. McCoy. And the part I remembered most about that one was when they were talking with, I don't know if he was a cast member or what, but he was talking with DeForest Kelly there, and he mentioned that he was, you know, one of his interests was old-time radio. So the next day he comes back, and DeForest, he has, for this guy, he's got a tape with a program that I guess he did on a suspense show or something back in the 40s, and I thought to myself, wow, now that would be something to, you know, to track down. You know, is that particular episode? I don't remember. I don't know if they said what one it was, but now I'm going to have to go and do a little research on that.
I just heard they stopped making the Star Trek magazine, and next year, the year after, is going to be a new Star Trek movie.
I think DeForest Kelly was also in some old-time radio, because I've heard him in Suspense, a couple of Suspense things that I have in a streaming audio stuff I have of Suspense, and I think some of those people have been in some of those, too, as well.
That's pretty interesting, you know, listening to all those performers, you know, and when they were in old-time radio. And I'll have to go and do some, you know, see if some sites that I go to regularly have those. As for the new movie, I hope it's going to be pretty good. I was really disappointed with the end of Star Trek Nemesis, you know, when they killed Data, or when Data, you know, died or whatever. I hated that moment. It brought tears to my eyes. In fact, there's a series, I guess, of, I don't know if they're like TV shows or what, that you can download on the internet for free, and I can't remember the address of the page. It's something about Star Trek, what is it, New Frontiers or something? Basically, it's, I don't know about prequels to the original series, but they've got them up there in BitTorrent and whatnot. They're sort of, I don't know if they're fan-made or anything, but they've got some members of the cast. Like, there was one that they did that was based on the Doomsday Machine from the original series. They've got the man that played Commodore Decker, I think his name was. They got him reprising his role at almost a prequel to that episode, I think it was.
Well, speaking of Nemesis, I was very disappointed in that movie as well. Oh my, that was so terrible. And I couldn't really follow the plot line. There was a lot of action. There was a part in there that I think was kind of crucial to the film that we didn't get to see. I'm not sure, but the fact that they killed off Data was really, I don't know, it was terrible. And I don't know, it just sort of ended on this bleak note. I don't know. So that was kind of a letdown seeing that movie.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't put it better myself. But, yeah, I've got the audiobook version of that Star Trek Nemesis. I should really listen to it. I just ripped it from the CDs and put it on my hard drive. I know I'm going, you know, all over the place here with different topics, but that's one thing that sort of got me into Star Trek was the audiobooks. You know, when they've got all the sound effects and music and whatnot, those are, in my opinion, absolutely impressive. You don't usually get that in a lot of audiobooks.
I wonder how come they stopped making the magazine though for Star Trek.
Back to the movie and the killing of Data. Actually, there was one line in there, if you listen carefully, that said he part of him might have been preserved, because they wanted to leave it open for another movie, but then they never made a movie of it. So I don't know. And apparently, the characters have aged quite a bit in the last 10 years. So I don't know if they ever will make a movie or not. That's a disappointment. They haven't had any movies coming out with the Voyager crew or Deep Space Nine or Enterprise crew.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, I'm not sure why the magazine, why they stopped that. Maybe there's not enough content somehow to keep it going. That's too bad, though. And as for the B4, the other android or whatever, some people have speculated that, like, he could have some of Data's memories transferred to him somehow. But I don't go for that, really. If it's not Data, it's not Data, and they shouldn't try to make him Data. But that's just my opinion. And I think that, you know, like you said, the cast is aging somewhat now. But what I think they could have done is just left it off at, left off the Next Generation movies at the Insurrection movie, and just left it at that, and left people to, you know, think what they wanted, and And then they wouldn't have to kill anyone off.
I wonder if they're going to make any more Star Trek series on that. The last one was Enterprise. It wasn't that bad.
This is Shane Christensen here from Houston, Texas. I've been in here for just a few minutes, but I wanted to, you know, let everybody talk before I jumped in. But maybe it's just me, but I really, ever since, I guess, Generations and then First Contact, from there on, I just, and maybe Insurrection because I've only seen it once, and I haven't had a chance to see it over and over again like I have all the other movies, but I couldn't get into that one, and I certainly couldn't get into Nemesis, but every other Star Trek movie that I've ever seen, especially the ones with the original cast and with Generations, every one of those movies I've seen more times than I can count. And also the all of the series. I have all of all 79 of the original episodes in some sort of audio, whether it be MP3 or Ogg Vorbis format. And I've seen all the Next Generation episodes, and I've seen a good bit of DS9 and Voyager. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see much of Enterprise, but the little bit that I have seen has been really good.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about that original series, that it was so incredibly special. I think that the episodes, some of them were just hilarious. Like, we got to talk about The Trouble with Tribbles, if anybody has seen that as many times as I have. It's so funny and it's so charming. And in fact, there's an animated Star Trek series that was on Saturday mornings for a couple of years, actually I guess about a year and a half. They didn't want it to be a children's show, but it was kind of marketed as one. It was only a half an hour series, and I have them on videotape. And I don't know if you can still get them. I haven't seen them in DVD form, but they were each about, once you took the commercials out, they were about 20 minutes. And they had just a few of the voices. They had the original, you know, Leonard Nimoy being Spock, and they had Nichelle Nichols doing a lot of the voices. She disguised her voice so she wasn't just Uhura. And then they had Scotty doing, you know, a lot of different voices besides him. And I'm pretty sure they had Captain Kirk's voice. But you could tell it was done on a budget because it was animated. But at least they had the voices in there.
Yeah, that was... I've seen a couple of episodes of that, and that was actually really good. One thing that I do have, and I say I have it, I can probably go back to audible.com and get it, but I have a version, an audio version of, believe it or not, War of the Worlds, where it's being acted out and played out by the Star Trek crew.
That will be interesting to hear. With the animated series, I'm not sure if you can buy them. I mean, that I don't know, especially not in the States, but there's a webpage up, and they have all the episodes, the audio track in real audio up there. I mean, the quality is like, you know, it's not the greatest, but it can be listened to, so they have all the 22 episodes out up there. And then also there are books out there, the adaptations, like there are the James Bish adaptations for the original series. There was a series of 10 books, paperback books done by Alan Dean Foster, like in the mid-70s, and he did like the adaptation of the animated series. And to read those, like, I mean, my introduction of the animated series was first when I was about 10, and before I'd actually gotten into Star Trek and German, and they cut them down to about 12 minutes, and, you know, gets Bob telling jokes and stuff, so I didn't like that much. But then when I read those books, and I read those before I saw the series in English, they're good. I mean, that it's cut down to, like you guys said, like to a budget, but it is Star Trek. I mean, you get all the original voices, Kirk's there, and DeForest Kelly's there too, and then only like with the supporting characters. I mean, you can tell like that James Doohan is doing a lot of voices and stuff. But I mean, I like the animated series there too, and it's like I'm amazed sometimes that a lot of like Star Trek fans, they don't even know about it. So I can look up the webpage. I have the bookmark somewhere.
Oh, that would be pretty good. I'm interested in that. I'm not familiar at all with the animated series. I've heard about it, but I've never seen any episodes. That War of the Worlds thing where they had Leonard Nimoy and a few others. I heard that on CBC Radio 1. They played it last year, I believe. I don't know if it was around this time or when it was. But to be honest with you, I was kind of disappointed with that. I think they kind of overdid it in a way. The acting wasn't, in my opinion, for some of the characters, very, very professional. But that's just me, I guess. When you listen to them on Star Trek and everything. But I don't know. I mean, there were a few times where they could have done things a little better, I thought.
Well, I agree. I mean, sometimes you just have to leave well enough alone and things like that. Because if something's done once and done very well, then it shouldn't be redone.
Yeah, well, I don't really know, but I mean, I like the idea they had there, but I just mean they could have done a better job of the acting on the War of the Worlds thing. But that episode of Trouble with Tribbles, that one's hilarious. In fact, there's the Deep Space Nine episode, Trials and Tribulations. Tribulations or something like that. That's pretty good too. When they go back in time and whatnot. That's in my opinion a classic.
Yeah, the Trouble with Tribbles has to be my favorite original Star Trek episode. And the thing you said about the War of the Worlds thing, Kelly, I can agree with you on a lot of that because in my opinion, there's as far as War of the Worlds goes, there's nothing like the original 1938. Radio version, which I happen to have somewhere on a CD, and I also have the Jeff Wayne version that came out back in, I think, 78 it was, and I have that also.
Yeah, I thought the original was 1939, and I think I've heard the 70s version that you're talking about, but again, although it was done better than the Star Trek one, it's still one of those scenarios where if something's done perfectly or as close to perfection as is possible once, then it would almost, well, if I may put it dramatically, it would be almost sacrilegious to try to do it again.
Does anybody know if they're going to be making sometime in the future a new Star Trek series?
I've heard about things, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about a new series yet. I don't know. There's a movie supposed to be coming out in 2008, but they even still are sketchy on that. They don't know, you know, what that's going to be. Personally, I think they need to move on to Deep Space Nine now. Unless, of course, they want to bring Data back and in the Next Generation, then by all means they can do another Next Generation movie.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I must admit, I'm sort of getting into Deep Space Nine. The one episode I've been listening to for quite a bit is Babel, I think it's called. It's where they Chief O'Brien, he's doing work on the replicator, and then there's this virus that is unleashed on the station and stuff like that. That's quite the episode. They really did a good job on that one. And of course, some of the books that they've got out there, like the Big Game, that was I think that might have been one of my first introduction to Deep Space Nine was that one, the Big Game. That one I quite liked. Actually, speaking of books and whatnot, has anyone played any Star Trek games for the computer? I remember one that I got a few years when I first got a computer back in 1990. It was called Trek Trivia, and it had about 100 or so questions, I think, on a variety of subjects, so multiple choice, and I was having a lot of fun with that one. trying to, you know, get my Trek knowledge up a little bit, and that really helped.
I know that they have Trek 2000, and I know that it was done, somebody did a demonstration of it on the American Council for the Blind website, I believe. I hope I'm not wrong in that, but it was an interesting demonstration. And I just wanted to comment on the Deep Space Nine. It is, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it's not as popular as some of the other series in Star Trek. But I think it has a lot of good stuff in it. I really enjoyed it, and especially there at the end, maybe the sixth to the seventh seasons of the end, you had to really stay with the show. You couldn't miss an episode, otherwise you would have missed a lot. You would have been lost. So it was kind of an ongoing, one big, long episode, because one thing in last week's episode would affect something in this week's episode, and so on, and so it was interesting. And I love that one called Babel. It is so funny. That's one of my favorite episodes. It's a great episode.
Is that the one where the virus comes on the ship and it starts squirting people with all its stuff? Yeah, it's like a big bacteria.
I met John DeLancey one time, who plays Q, and this was a little tiny, almost like a classroom type of thing. There are only maybe 10 or 12 or 15 or 20 of us in this, and he is so much fun. And then there was something called Zubu afterwards, and he couldn't go down there, but he had other commitments after that. But he was saying, I wish I could be with you guys. But he was so much fun, and he was talking about his experiences being, you know, playing Q and that kind of thing and some other things. And also, I didn't realize this about him, and he said this himself, he's dyslexic. His father actually encouraged him to go into acting, which most parents don't do. It was rather an interesting little tiny class convention, whatever you want to call it. I really had fun. It was a one-day convention in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I really, really enjoyed that.
Wow, that is a stroke of fortune that you got to meet him. That's neat. And I had no idea he was dyslexic. How interesting. He was a great character. He was always so funny and so irritatingly childish that you just loved him. And and to see Captain Picard always get mad at him and just get so frustrated. And it was great. I think... I'm not sure on the Babel how the virus ended up on the station. I would have to go back and watch that episode because I'm not quite sure, but it was a good episode.
You know, if I remember right, I think they've got Q on Enterprise. I think I just saw an episode with him on there, you know, where he comes in for the first time. And see, that's a fun thing about Enterprise, is you get to see how everything started. But I think Q's on there.
One of my favorite episodes with Q, I think would have to be Star Trek Voyager. All those, I think they only had like three episodes where he was on there, and those I thought were all right. And on Deep Space Nine, I still keep remembering the line from this from the episode Q Less, I think it was this line, "You hit me! Picard never hit me!"
Oh, yeah, I love that one. He was just so shocked. That was great. Yeah, and I really do think he was at his best, however, on Next Generation. I mean, Captain Picard would just get so frustrated and annoyed. It was great. And that episode in Next Generation when Q lost his powers, that was just great. I loved it.
Oh yeah, that was funny. He kept trying to use him and he didn't even have him.
Oh, hi. I hate to interrupt. This is Dr. Wibble, and I was just curious about my levels and things. Just wanted to make sure I sounded all right.
Yeah, you sound pretty good, although this it sounds almost like you've got some pitch thing on your computer here. I don't know if that's your your normal voice or not, but it just sounds a little deep. No offense.
Kind of reminded me of Worf when he's growling.
Yeah, it does. It does sound like you have some sort of effect or some such thing on your voice, and even if you do, I'd sure like to know how you're doing it.
Well, I guess you could say that. It's probably the noise gate, though. I am running on a board where there's a lot of processing, including some gating and compression to make my voice sound all smooth, to kind of, well, not really pimp myself out for the ladies, as I've got hit on approximately 0 times within the last few months. But at least it makes my voice sound all nice and consistent.
Yeah, it sure sounds pretty good there, however you're doing it. It's really good.
Yeah, you really ought to change your name to Dr. Worf. That would really fit.
Nah, I don't know. I just came up with Dr. Wibble on a hunch. It was just something to do, you know? God, I wish I sounded like this in real life. Man, I could really pimp myself out this way. Dang.
Speaking of names, one thing that I kind of want to do after recording this chat is at the very end put a list of how certain things are spelled. I use a braille display a lot, and I noticed poking around on some of the places like Amazon where they have reviews of a lot of the series, they spell out who did what and the name of the, not so much the name of the actors, but the names of the characters are unusual. Like Worf is W-O-R-F, and some of the other ones, Tribbles has 2 B's in it, and some of the other names like Maquis is M-A-Q-U-I-S, and of course Enterprise has the Zindi, which is X-I-N-D-I. There's a lot of really unusual names out there.
Okay, I did not know you guys were recording. Now I feel like such a complete and total idiot. Yes, it was a pitch shifter, and this is Derek, by the way. I just wanted to see how good you guys were with catching such things. And even with the compression, you guys are pretty good.
Well, that's pretty good there, Derek.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're an audio geek, it's good to have nice equipment, I guess. You know, something to do. Anyway, I didn't know you guys are recording, and sorry for inadvertently screwing it up. So with that, I give you a dial tone from the phone patch as well, just because I may as well just break stuff good and proper, since I've already screwed stuff up more than intended.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And as for being an audio geek, well, I guess I can consider myself one as well.
Well, you know, the whole world of BCT is going to hear your voice like that, Derek. Why don't you go back to what it was? That sounded really cool.
I guess. All I have to do is plug the quad for it, which is an effects processor, back into the insert of the board. Yes, that's right. I'm too lazy to hook it up to a send. Actually, I'm using my patch bay, which is, of course, going in through inserts. So it's the same difference. Want it that, you know, the other way, I guess I could. It's not hard or anything.
Just curious, Derek, though you say the Quad 4, is that a pretty accessible effects processor for a blind person to use?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say, to me, any device whose menus don't wrap is accessible. Or if the menus wrap, there's a very obvious way to tell when you're at the starting point of the menus. And I guess you could say the menus wrap, but when, like for example, when you're editing an effect, and when you get back around to its first parameter, the parameter is on or off. So it's very obvious when you turn one click, once you've selected one of the parameters that it shows on the screen, if you're back to the first or not, because then it cuts the effect. So let's say I have a pitch shifter routed to a reverb, for example. Or like an auto wah routed to a chorus, routed to a reverb. Any of those effects that I cut you know, depending on the routing grid, will either shut down the whole thing until I turn it back on, or it will kind of duck out and just leaving the effects in between the ones in the chain, depending on how it's set up. So, I mean, you know, to me it is.
Speaking of names, sometimes it is hard to know how the names are spelled in Star Trek, like the Zindi, you know, X-I-N-D-I, and especially when you come across it with a synthesizer. I know mine says Sheendi, and the first time I heard that, I thought, what is that? Where is that coming from? I've not heard of that, you know, type, that race, and so I had to have it spell it for me, and then I realized, you know, what that was, and it was kind of confusing at first. And also, not that it really matters, but do you ever wonder what some of these aliens look like, you know? I mean, I've had some of them described to me by sighted people, and it's quite fascinating to see what they look like, or to hear what they look like, and then to if you're able to have a figure of, say, a Ferengi, like an action figure, and then you can even tell further what they look like.
Yeah, that's true. Also, with names, it's very good to have synthesizers, or to use spelling, because you don't want to, for example, talk in public, and you mention a name, or a company name, or anything like that, and you completely mispronounce it due to just taking, you know, a synthesizer at its word that it's pronouncing it correctly. Same with spelling. You know, Eloquence is unfortunately very forgiving of misspellings, which, you know, without a spell check can allow us to get very lax on spelling unknowingly. So we can come across looking very stupid, you know, if a sighted reader reads something that we write, if we don't have braille displays and we don't spell check, as a result of being lazy.
You know, I personally use a Braille Star 40 display, and it's kind of interesting, you know, when you hear these names, like you say, you know, the McKee, and then you find the spelling for that. Oh, that's interesting. So that's how they spell that, you know. That's my way of looking at it. But, yeah, I agree with you there about the aliens. I always wonder what some of those look like. I mean, I know the Klingons, you know, they kind of have the bony ridges or something on their foreheads, I guess. But there's others, you know, like what do the Cardassians look like, or the Bajorans, and all those ones, you know.
I have a set of action figures of aliens that used to be sold by a little company called Johnson Smith, and unfortunately it's not available anymore, but these were six aliens from Star Trek, the original series, and probably the first part of Generation. So I can tell you a little bit about what they look like. The Ferengi have really big, big ears. I mean, they're big. They're big. They're like a dog's ears standing up. And the Vulcans, they do have pointed ears. They look pretty humanoid. The Gorns, you know, the lizards from the first original series, they have real big extended snouts and mouths. And their ears are just little holes on the sides of their heads. And I don't know. I have to go get, there's six of them that I've got. One of them is a Targ. That's like a cat with big spines running down its back. It's a Klingon pet, I think. And there's two others. The Andorians. They've got big antennas on top of their head, just sticking up, straight up. And the antennas are shaped sort of like print parentheses. One kind of has like a left arrow key, and the other one is like a right arrow key. And the left one's on the left side of their head, and the right's on the right side of their head. And there's one other one that I'm missing I can't think of.
Oh, yeah, I have that set of little stuffed figures as well. Let's see, there's the Vulcan, the Andorian, the Gorn, the Targ, the Ferengi, and am I missing one, seems like. But from what I've heard of the Cardassians, they're sort of a reptilian species with sort of scaly faces, and they have these ridges all up and down their neck. And the Bajorans are basically humanoid with the only really real distinction is their ridged nose, which, you know, just has ridges down the nose. And the Vulcans also have the sort of the eyebrows that are not straight across as ours. They are kind of slanted upward just a bit. And, of course, the pointed ears, same with the Romulans, since they're basically related to the Vulcans.
You know, speaking of the pointed ears, I just wanted to say I got a set of those from my Braille instructor. When she went to Alberta, there's a town there, Vulcan, Alberta, it's called. And, of course, they make a big deal of, you know, Star Trek there, and she bought me these pointed ears. And at the time, when I was about 15 or so, I could actually put them on, you know, on my ears, you know, and just look like a Vulcan or whatever. Anyway, one day I had them on, and I went down the hall at school, just going past the lockers, you know, like nothing's happened. And this one girl just shrieked when she saw me with these ears. And, you know, someone was like, it's okay, it's okay, it's not real. Oh, thank goodness, she says.
Wow, she must have been pretty sheltered. But, you know, I've got to step out here for a bit. But last comment, it amazes me, the creativity that people have. You know, it's one thing to be able to make a variation of something that's originally created, but to sit there and create all these words, all these names, and things like that, just out of the blue, you know, is a really, really interesting talent. I mean, it may not seem that way, but if you try to make up a random word based on absolutely nothing, it's hard to do. I don't know, granted, where I came up with Dr. Wibble. I've never heard Wibble of anything before, but still, you know, just coming up with a word or a name that's just extremely weird like that out of nothing, you know, is harder probably than one would think. And that's why I applaud people that are good at such obscure things.
Yeah, when she screamed, when she saw your ears, you should have told her to stop behaving in such an illogically emotional manner.
Oh, you know, the one I went and got my little alien critters, and the one we weren't remembering was the Mugato. It's kind of humanoid, I guess. He's sitting, which is kind of interesting, and he's got this big thing sticking out of the top of his head, and kind of a ridge thing on his forehead, I guess it is. I don't know. I don't remember much about Mugatos.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that the Mugatos were that's the one we forgot, which I think was that race only in one episode of the old series, because
I think it was. I remember hearing the name in Star Trek Memories. They were saying something about the Mugato or whatever, but I don't know what episode that was in. And you're right, I should have said that, you know, to her. You know, that is a most illogical reaction.
Isn't the Mugato in Devlin's Dark?
No, that's the, oh, darn, what's the name? It's the creature made of silicon, and I can't think of the, oh, the Horta, that's what it is, the Horta.
I don't know if anyone else has this trouble, but I don't know Star Trek episodes by their titles. I just know by events, because they put the title up on the screen, and I never am able to know what the titles are of each episode.
Oh, you might be able to get an episode guide, though. I mean, there's stuff online where you get, like, the episode title and gives the description and stuff. So I always thought you might know them by their number, because like some people know them like, you know, by their air date or their like an abbreviation, and I find it really hard to remember that. So the ones that I know, I try to like remember the title and see what goes on in the episode.
Yeah, there are quite a number of episode guides out there. You can do a Google search for Star Trek episode guides and you'll probably find them. I got a bunch of them off of sciencefiction.com years and years ago. I don't even know if that site's still up or not. But it had, up to that point, it had the Star Trek original series and the Next Generation and the animated and Deep Space Nine and part of Voyager, but not the whole Voyager, because they were only in the fourth season when they quit writing the guide.
I know Wikipedia has some up there. You can do a search on there on Wikipedia. And also, what I like to do is if I know the episode that I want to look up, you know, I'll type in Google, look on StarTrek.com for the particular episode name, such as, let's say, The Trouble with Tribbles, and it'll come up with a link where it says the link's called like StarTrek.com episode, and then I just press enter and I'm right there.
Yeah, that's a fabulous website. I mean, it has all the information on it. I just never thought to look for episode guides. That just never crossed my mind. I'll have to check it out.
Is that StarTrek.com? Is that the website?
Yeah, that is. And go there if you if you're able to have the chance to go there, because they have bios on the crew. They have, of course, news about Star Trek and the actors and different things. But what I find really interesting is like the bios of the crew, and then they have like a clip of the day and a trivia question. All sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, if you know where to look for them, you can also find little videos and stuff. They had one I saw the other day, the history of the Borg or something like that, a timeline, and that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and they had one on Sarek of Vulcan, which was interesting too.
Yeah, that's one character they should have developed more, was Sarek. They actually wrote a book on, wasn't it? I think it was on him. It was on Spock's father. That was Sarek, wasn't it? My brain's going dead right now.
Yes, it's called Sarek, and I believe it's by A.C. Crispin. I was kind of disappointed in it, though. Just because I wanted to show him interacting more with his family. And of course, he has a human wife, which their interaction, to see, they had a bit of interaction in the book, but not very much. And it'd be fascinating to see the interaction between them, because they're so different. I mean, she wasn't going to become Vulcan for him when they married, and he wasn't going to become human for her. So they both have their personalities, and I think you're right. They should have developed his character more, because I think he's one of the most fascinating characters of the series.
Yeah, and that book was kind of long. You know, it focused on him. It was hard to get into that book, because you're right. You know, they just didn't deal with his interaction with his family at all, especially with his son. Of course, they were kind of not on speaking terms particularly. But there's a lot of characters that they could have developed. Like in Voyager, I had a couple of comments. One was Sakote. I think that would have been fascinating if they would have developed him more. And also, Seven of Nine. I was kind of waiting for her to become a little more human, other than that one episode where she took on different personalities. Because, man, she right up to the last episode, she just sounded kind of dead. I don't know.
With character development of Sarek, I mean, I'm not sure if you guys, any of you, are into fan fiction, but, like, there you get some of that, like, you know, the professional books leave out. I mean, I really like A.C. Crispin's books. I like the two, like, Yesterday's Son and, what's the other one, Time for Yesterday. She's an excellent author. I really liked her. And I read the Sarek book, and it wasn't bad, but, like you said, I would have liked to see more, like, you know, developments there that goes back to the to Babel and stuff. And but if you like character exploration, then I would recommend like getting some fan fiction, because some of that stuff is very excellent.
What was the name of the episode about the deaf mediator in Next Generation? I guess that guy was actually deaf, and a friend of mine actually met him, I think, or some way or other met him, and he did some interesting sign language for some people, other than what the show was. But I was just wondering what the title of that was.
So he was really deaf? Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Didn't know that till I went to a Star Trek convention. I went to several of them, but I went to one, and I asked about that when someone ahead of me in the line said that guy was actually totally deaf.
That is so interesting. And no, I don't know the name of the episode. Of course, I'm not the best one to ask about episode names, but I do know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not sure what one that is either. I'll have to go back over the Star Trek Next Generation episodes and see there at some point. One thing I was always wondering about, just a couple points, and then I gotta get out of here for a little bit, but hopefully I can come back, was with the Borg on the TV, you know, the Next Generation and Voyager. You know, whenever they speak, they always, you know, it sounds like there's, you know, lots of people, you know, just reading the same lines. I wonder how they can do all that, you know, and keep it all in sync. That, you know, that's something I don't think they've ever really described, at least on the DVD documentaries I've seen. And as far as plot development or character development, I should say, with some of the characters from Voyager, there's a book that I kind of thought was interesting called Star Trek Voyager Pathways. I don't know if any organizations like the CNIB or the Library of Congress have it, but I know it's you can get it in the Simon and Schuster form, you know, where they got all the sound effects and everything, and that was kind of interesting, because basically it's about these, you know, the crew members that are basically stranded on this planet or in this encampment or something, and they're basically telling their life stories to each other to pass the time, and I thought that was a neat concept.
That's an interesting concept, not only from that perspective, but also to note, and this is Brandon here, by the way, to note the fact that how many times, I mean, have we seen this before with documentaries, that just the stuff that they show you, very interesting. And what I'd like to know with the Star Trek series, if anybody can tell me, was what was the name of the very last Star Trek episode? As I used to follow Star Trek when I was little, but boy, some of the stations around here nowadays, you can't even hear it anymore.
Yeah, I like that. I like that book, Pathways. It was quite interesting. Another one, if you're interested in the character development, is Mosaic. I want to say it's by Jerry Taylor, but I could be incorrect about that. But I'm sure if you just look up Star Trek Mosaic, it too is a Simon and Schuster production, and it is explores Captain Janeway's character, and so it's a very interesting book.
Now, did you say the name of that book was Mosaic? Is that what I heard? I mean, that's an interesting type.
Yeah, it's called Mosaic.
You know, you don't know if they have an audio version of that.
Yes, that is an audio version. It's put out by Simon and Schuster, where they have, I believe they have Kate Mulgrew, who plays Janeway, narrating that. And then they have, of course, the music and the sound effects, so it's quite fun.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Yeah, I've always been interested in knowing, like, the Star Trek and all those other things. And not just Star Trek, but, you know, take some of the other things, for instance. You know, apart from Star Trek, how many people who you ask them nowadays, have you ever heard of Star Trek? Or even Star Trek Next Generation? Some of the people that I've talked to are just like, never heard of it, never heard of it. But look at how popular Star Trek has been, too. Star Trek has had a lot of popularity. And a matter of fact, if this tells you anything, you know, it's like half my family, at least I've noticed. If you ask about three quarters of my immediate family, not just the people I live with, but some of the people a little further east of me, have you ever heard of Star Trek? Most of the answer you're going to get is yes.
Yeah, I am. That's one thing that's always amazed me, is that as popular as Star Trek is, and you know, I get the same thing. You know, I ask people, are you a Star Trek fan or whatever, and some people say, oh, I've never even heard of Star Trek. And I'm going, oh, my God, what rock are you crawling out from under?
Really, I have never come across that. I mean, everyone I've talked to knows about Star Trek, even if they've never watched it. I mean, they know, they've heard of it. But, however, most people seem to stop watching it after Next Generation, or they say they've only seen Next Generation, and then it tends to stop, and they've never watched anymore, or they don't know about, you know. Mainly the Next Generation seems to be the basic focus, seems like.
I got my Braille light and looked up the last Star Trek episode in the original series. I don't know if that's what you wanted, Brandon, but it was Turnabout Intruder, and it had Janice Lester as the main character. I mean, she's not the actress, but she was one of the main characters. So that might help you to figure out what was the last one in that series.
Yeah, the last episode that where Kirk switched his bodies with a woman and had to face it really well. You have him sitting there and, like, you know, filing his nails, polishing his nails, and then, like, he walks. I mean, that's like the lady in Kirk's body, and Shatner walks through the door and swinging his hips just a little. And that's a really cool one to watch.
How about the last? Actually, that was close. I'm not sure who it was that found the one that you mentioned. That episode sounds familiar, but I'm referring to overall. How about in the Next Generation series? Does he have information on the on that, or was that particularly one that, I mean, for that?
If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone. I think the last Next Generation episode was All Good Things, where Captain Picard kept switching between three different time periods in history.
Yeah, I believe that was the last TNG episode, and as I remember, it was a two-parter, or at least 2 hours long anyway.
Yes, it was. It was 2 hours, and it was a good one. And then the last episode of Deep Space Nine was something about what's left behind or something, and it just sort of wrapped up the series of that.
Have the series ever been audio described, like with DVS or anything like that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have access to a lot of the audio-described Star Trek Next Generation episodes.
Yeah, but not all of the episodes were described, right? I mean, I don't remember. I don't even think it was quite 50, maybe 40, 50, something like that.
Did you find those on the Internet? Because I've never seen any audio-described episodes. I've seen the movies, but not the episodes.
I think some of that depends on where you live. Like, I think some of the agencies and blindness agencies in Europe have described them, and maybe some of them in Canada, but in the U.S. I don't know how easy it is to get some of those unless they're on the Internet. I know Freedom Box had some. When I was a member, I was kind of looking at some of that stuff, but I don't know, you know, they're audio, but it would be hard to copy them off onto something, and it's probably illegal too.
Well, I mean, that was what I was talking about earlier. It's like they come from the UK, and it's like Sky Television there. I think that's Prior Television, and they described some of, I mean, of the Voyager, Next Generation, and DS9. I think most of the audio description was Next Generation, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, you get somebody in the UK to record them or something. But I mean, that was really. I mean, I watched some of those and. For me, it was like, I really liked it because it's not so overdone. It seemed really well done. I mean, it's like you only get like the essential stuff. It's not overdone that they're constantly talking over the music or something. I really liked it for audio description, and of course, Charles.
I also met Marina Sirtis, who plays Deanna Troi. She has the most beautiful long hair I have ever seen in my life. And she gave me her autograph, and she looked so dainty and so graceful when she did that. It was just unbelievable. I mean, that was so neat.
You know, and I that is very interesting. You even got an autograph from her. That's amazing. I didn't even know they had even made audio descriptive versions of Star Trek at all, regardless of whether it were, regardless of where in the world it was. I didn't even know they even came up with them. So I'm curious to know, if they haven't done so already here in the U.S., do you think that'll become more and more of a more and more popular to get to see an audio descriptive version of Star Trek?
Well, it probably depends on funding, you know, how much money can they spend on this stuff. But it's really a shame, as we said earlier, that they didn't do all the films. They did the first one, they did the second one, they did the fourth, fifth, and sixth ones, but they didn't do the other ones.
You know, interesting you should say that, because back in, I want to say it was 93 or 94, for those of you who are familiar with the older DVS catalogs and the home videos and stuff, unless it was a misprint, they had Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. It was in the catalogs for a while, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, it disappeared. And I think, as far as movies go, unless I haven't kept up enough with the DVS home video catalog, the last one they had described was 6.
Yeah, I think you're right. The last one is 6. I think. But also, what I think is, how come they're all on video? How come they don't come out with them on DVD? Because, you know, that would really be nice to have the Star Trek movies on DVD described.
No, it's probably technically more difficult to do that. Because with the video, you can just record an extra track, but with a DVD, you'd probably have to record the whole thing over again and mix it and remix it and mix the audio in with it and then burn it to DVD. So it's probably, you know, a cost thing. But it would be wonderful if they would just build audio tracks into everything that they released. I mean, boy, that would be a dream come true for all of us, because then everything that we get, we could, if we knew how, we could access the audio from the DVD and not have any problems.
Man, yeah, no kidding, that would be great.
Actually, it would be easier, I think, for them to do audio description on DVD versus a videotape, because with the DVD, all they'd have to kind of do is add a separate audio track, whereas with a videotape, it seems as though you probably would have to re-record the whole thing and do a lot more mixing. And also, I think what else they could do to cut costs is, since speech technology has come such a long way, I mean, we have the AT&T Natural Voices now, ScanSoft, we have some very excellent voices. The latest ones that came out were from Next Up. They're by a cappella group, and they work with text aloud. So what they could do is, if they didn't want to actually have someone sit there and describe it all, they could just have somebody type it into text aloud and just do some editing and have the speech of, like, one of the a cappella pro voices do the describing, like the Heather voice or the Ryan voice, because they sound extremely human, and I think they're only going to get better.
You know, I would second that, except that the amount of editing they would have to do that would probably be beyond our scope at this point. Because right now, at least from what I can tell from some sound editors, you've got to, the first thing that you have to worry about is trimming. Or when to time it, when to pause the speech so it's not speaking it all in one glob. And it'd be nice if you could actually put parameters into the speech output so that during the audio descriptive process, if you put a little parameter in there long enough, you can pause it. So you can do that with DeckTalk. You can tell it by generating a 0 hertz tone with however many seconds or something to just, you know, not say anything until this particular part if you time it just right. And it would be nice if you could do that with these pro voices because, yeah, you're right. They sound pretty human as it were, but if you could just do that, boy, that'd be interesting to have a Star Trek series with a computer-generated descriptive voice as it already has a computer voice, as Star Trek already has a computer in its series. So kind of makes it even more interesting.
It is possible if you go to Next Up and if you buy Text Aloud, you can add pauses and different things with the voices. In fact, with Text Aloud, you can not only add pauses, but you can have voice changes in the text. For example, suppose you're reading a book and you want to make it more interesting. You could have a sentence read by Heather or a certain section read by Heather, and you could have another section read by Ryan. Or suppose you have some text in English or in German, you could specify, read this text in English with this voice, with this a cappella pro voice or real speak voice or whatever natural high quality voice you want. So yeah, you can already do that. You can add the pauses and change voices with Next Up's Text Aloud.
Well, that I did not know. I thought Text Aloud was like a lot of these TTS programs. Of course, the only other program that I'm familiar with that you can do a lot of that, can do all sorts of crazy stuff with this cool speech, but, you know, I won't go into that because that's way off topic. What I think would be nice, too, what do you think of NeoSpeech? I mean, yes, the a cappella voices are pretty high quality, but there's also some nice little features that I like in NeoSpeech, Paul and Kate. For instance, if part of the text consists of just a short little thing where you write the letters OK, and that's the only thing you have it say, it says it's so human-like, you'd swear they were talking right to you. Now, though I will say, I think you could almost pull the same thing off with a cappella, but do you think that NeoSpeech will get better as well, like the a cappella pro is? Or do you think the a cappella pro may be toppy? Because another option, too, is Loquendo, because now I don't know where anyone would ever purchase the voices. I haven't seen them yet, but, they have these parameters now in the Loquendo TTS. You can make the synth laugh. You can do all kinds of nice, very, very strange things you cannot even do with the a cappella voices. Now, as far as the intonation and the naturalness, I don't think that Loquendo would cut it for audio descriptive movies. I mean, I think you got to go back to a cappella pro. But when it comes to interesting deals, yeah, I'd say Loquendo would definitely go in there too as a possibility.
I think NeoSpeech, they haven't fully realized their potential, because I think personally they are the best voices. You can adjust their pitch and their speed, and they have great inflection in their voices. And, of course, they only have 2 English voices right now, and I am hoping that they will get more, because that would sound pretty natural in a Star Trek narration for a movie or what have you. I really enjoy the NeoSpeech voices.
Yeah, the NeoSpeech is actually, they are actually human voices. What they did was they got the people to say different phonemes and different speech segments in different ways. And it probably took them days to record a lot of that stuff, but that's basically what it is the voices with the different little pieces of speech concatenated together. My problem with that is that it sounds so chopped up. I'm so used to eloquence, I guess, and I'm also, you know, very much a Braille user. So, but if they could, as you said, if they could get their potential up a bit more and see the possibilities, they could maybe smooth the texture of the voices out to make them sound smoother and more natural, and then they would really, really, really have a good product.
And, well, yeah, that is true, though I do think, too, another thing that they need to smooth up on, not just the choppiness, but whenever some, there are some times that I'm sure that the movies themselves, and Star Trek may be part of this, where there'll be a portion of the screen that is written in all caps. The one thing that Acapella Pro, NeoSpeech, and even a couple of sappy Force synths that I've listened to have a problem with is when you start putting text in all caps. When you start doing that, they're trained because of abbreviation things to speak as letters. So you take a very long name or even a short name and you put all caps in front of it with NeoSpeech, and then NeoSpeech starts spelling the word instead of speaking it. And, of course, same thing with Acapella. And then that kind of ruins the naturalness thing we were talking about, because then the Acapella voice starts sounding kind of auto-tune about itself, as I say, because that's what that choppiness technically is. And what it is they're using a different concatenation method than I've heard of. I'm not sure if anybody knows. I'm sure we'll talk about this a little later when we get into doing more talk about synthesizers. But, yeah, I mean, me, I've listened to just about any, just about half the synths out there, and there's four synths that really jump out at me: Acapella Pro, NeoSpeech, Liquendo, and I also have to look at some of the new samples that I've been hearing of, or the one that Nuance Vocalizer. That to me, I couldn't tell any choppiness at all, hardly. I mean, there was some bits and pieces there, but that one was also pretty good. But then how about Rhetorical Systems? Well, you don't hear much about that group anymore.
Can we get back on topic of Star Trek, or are we done with the Star Trek chat? We've been going for about an hour and a half. I could quit recording, and then we could just get on to talking about synthesizers. What do you guys want to do?
Well, before we leave the chat, the Trek chat, I just want to get everyone's opinions on if anyone has ever read Star Trek fan fiction, and what's everybody's opinion on that?
I haven't read any fan fiction, I don't think, for Star Trek. I don't really know where you can go to get that. Although, I will admit, in my creative writing class when I was still in school, I wrote a few stories based on Star Trek, and they were terrible. I can tell you that right now. I'm not even going to publish them.
Also, I'm going to cut out here in a second, but I want to find out with the Simon & Schuster stuff if you can actually go up there and purchase those audiobooks online as downloads.
I do believe that Audible has them. So I check there.
Okay, well, I'm going to say goodbye for now, and it's been a great chat, and hope everybody has a great evening.
Yeah, thank you, and it was good having you. And also, I don't know, Doris, if you're there or not, but I know that you're in Europe, and you had to really stay up late for this. It must probably be about 4 or 5 in the morning by now. So just wanted to say that you're a very brave and determined person. I got your email where you talked about where you were going to try to be part of it. And it's really special that you were. And goodness, everybody else, it was just really neat having this. And maybe we got to do it again. What do you think?
I'm certainly all for another Star Trek chat. It was great fun.
Absolutely. I really liked it as well.
Oh, definitely. It's great. We should definitely do it again.
Yeah, I was hoping this was going to be a regular event. And as for my dedication, well, it's also, it's like really hot over here and we don't have air conditioning. And so at night, it's like when it's coolest outside, so we're up airing out the apartment and doing the hot stuff and everything. So that was one reason I said I would be here if I'm up. To the lady asking about fan fiction, I've read quite a bit of fan fiction, like, you know, in the early 80s when I first got into fandom, there was no Next Generation, and there weren't that many, like, Star Trek professional books available either. So back then, if you wanted to have, like, new stories, and you better got down and wrote some and then shared some with other people. And I really like fan fiction. I mean, there's a lot of crap out too, but, you know, with everything. a lot of the fan fiction I read is really excellent. So people have a really good hold on the characters and stuff. So I miss part of that, like with fandom today. So much is available, like, you know, for, like, as merchandise, that I feel that the fandom has been lacking some of the like the creativeness. But like for Voyager, for example, there was like a virtual season out. Actually, I think two of them were kind of like, people didn't like the way it ended, so they went and wrote their own, and that's worth reading, and that's a bunch of other stuff. I would just Google for Star Trek and fan fiction, and you're sure to come up with something.
Yeah, I find that a lot of fan fiction, which is really explores the personal side and the personal lives of the characters, because how much can they pack into an hour, show? And the fan fiction kind of gives an outlet there for us all to kind of explore the characters in different scenarios and with their families and friends in a more, seems like a more personal way.
Hey guys, how are you? This is Eric. I just got into the Star Trek, just got home. I probably missed it, but just want to let you know that I am here, and hope you guys had a good chat, and sorry I missed it, but anyway, hope you guys are doing all right.
Hi Eric, and glad you came, and we're kind of ending it, but we're kind of not either, so if there's anything you want to talk about, then feel free, because, you know, we'll just keep going, doesn't make any difference to me.
Okay, cool. Wonder if there's any books now. If you ever noticed, you guys probably heard of it, but there's a station.
Eric, you still there? You kind of cut out. You said something about, did we notice there was a station or something?
Yeah, and also you typed something into the window about, like, go to this link, but I don't think the link made it.
Eric, this is being recorded from Line Cool Tech, so you're going to have to say what the link is so that the rest of the world will know it if they want to hear it.
I don't know if he's still in the room. I wonder if he had to leave.
Yeah, hey, problems with this connection, but I think you're talking about me. I don't know if you are or not, but anyway.
Yeah, it was weird. I was just having trouble for a second there. I wasn't getting the chirp when I was pushing down my control key, so that was odd, and it sounds like Eric is having some audio troubles as well.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I was trying to figure out what was going on. I know people are still in here because I'm sitting here looking at the list of people, and, you know, people are still here, but I don't know what the deal is.
Exactly. I can see all the people here, but sometimes when you push your control key, it doesn't want to work for you.
Well, I'm here. If you guys will hang on one second, I'm also on my Ventrilo server. I'll get the name of that page, and I'll go ahead and give that to you guys. Just one second.
Has anyone ever played or had anyone play the Star Trek Voyager game, Elite Force, I think it's called?
Is that for the blind?
No, it's for sighted people, but I was just wondering how the audio was in the game.
I haven't, because I don't have anybody that sighted that would really enjoy playing a game like that.
Well, put it to you like this, guys. I never played it, but I can say personally that normally your games you're going to get are, normally the audio is probably going to be movie standard audio kind of get, because you got to realize when they make a game, you're talking about a major production budget that they actually have to satisfy when they actually produce these games. Just to give you little guidelines on what you're dealing with here. I'm talking about like Dolby 5.1 surround sound, or maybe 7.1 in some cases.
Yeah, because it seems like there aren't very many games available for blind people. I mean, compared to what's out there for sighted people on PlayStation and computers in general, there's a lot more. And I think there's a program that you can get that you can take the audio actually from the games. You can kind of unpack it. And I'd like to, maybe sometime in my spare time, try to learn Visual Basic to actually make some of these games playable by blind people like Star Trek Elite Force, some of the Harry Potter games, and just some other games, so we have a broader, just something more to play.
Well, I know there were a couple of games out there where they were based on, well, they almost like these choose-your-own-adventure type of games. One was called Borg, and the other one was called Klingon, and they actually came out with versions of that, I guess, on tape, basically on a regular cassette, where they sort of had a bit of a storyline around it, you know, someone reading what was going on, or, you know, almost like, you know, in the Borg when they had this cadet, he was describing sort of what he was doing and whatnot, but it was based on the game. And for that, I thought that was kind of a good thing to have, you know, it all on tape. This is another one of those Simon Schuster ones. I don't know how well it would be, you know, to select, you know, a particular option in that game, you know, if they're, you know, depending on the graphical nature and all that. But
yeah, it would be interesting to see if there are any interactive fiction Star Trek games. Because even, you know, you can really get into quite a bit of playing and a good storyline with interactive fiction, and so I think they could do a lot of that interaction fiction with, say, Star Trek and Harry Potter and some of these other kinds of stories.
There was a text adventure game a few years ago. I think it was supposed to be based on Star Trek. It was called Bajoran Mercenary or something like that. And in actual fact, what it really was they just basically put in a nodal intro about, you know, the Cardassians have stolen these Bajoran artifacts or something, and you have to go and get them. And if I remember correctly, all it was a version of Colossal Cave with some changes based on Star Trek, but you could tell it was a version of Colossal Cave. I mean, they had, like, I don't know if the building at the end of the road was there or what, but it was pretty similar.
Yeah, but actually, what I was thinking more along the lines of doing something that's kind of like a cross between Shades of Doom and maybe Chillingham. But, of course, maybe kind of based on Voyager Elite Force, where you kind of have to do the same things, but it's all based on sound. And I think with the stereo capabilities that we have today and mixing and volume and things, I think it's possible to do. It's doable.
Oh, definitely. That's interesting because you're right. You know, it'd be cool to be able to move around the game, say on the bridge of a starship or something, and to actually be able to, you know, enter things into a console or to you know, speak to another crew member or something, and, you know, have both action and a storyline going on at the same time. That'd be great.
There, you're talking about moving around on the ship. Just curious, has anybody ever seen a model of the Enterprise?
I have seen and I have a small model of it. I have, but not the inside, just the outer, you know, outer part of it. Not like the bridge. But I do have a shuttlecraft, and you can lift up the front part of it, sort of like the hood of a car, and look inside and see tiny, teeny tiny controls, and then there's a seat with a harness in it to harness in the person who's piloting, and then they also have two seats, one on each side of the shuttlecraft, and they too have little harnesses. So that was quite interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You're talking about you actually saw a model of a ship. I wonder, on the outside, does it actually say, like the port nacelles or anything like that, or it's probably not that detailed, though. Just wondering if it showed anything like that on the outside of it.
Yeah, it has the nacelles and on the ship, and then it also has the saucer section, which is obviously detachable, and so It's quite interesting. The saucer section is round, of course, hence the name saucer. And then, of course, the nacelles are straight, just straight, I don't know, rod-type things on the back and sides of the ship.
Cool. Then you guys actually been to Las Vegas, because apparently, if you watch the if you get a VHS of First Contact, a lot of the previews at the time actually had a reference to the Las Vegas exhibit, which apparently was now a totally environment, which is a Star Trek-based environment. And they actually replicated, I think, 10 Forward and other areas of a ship. But it has, of course, all commercialized, but that's what they did in Las Vegas.
Yes, and that was very fun. I've been there, and you know, it's really cool. It's a fun thing to go to, and you know, if anyone ever gets the opportunity, I would recommend going there because it's really cool.
I had an opportunity, but apparently I was out of the area. My parents went down to Las Vegas for a financial conference, and of course I didn't get a chance to go there. But my dad told me that I would have really loved it.
Yes, you would have, because it's pretty neat. And of course, there's things we couldn't see, like they have Borg armor and ships behind glass, and there's no way to see those. But really, it's a neat experience, and of course, they have merchandise there as well, and it's really, really fun.
Hey, right on. Speaking of the Borg, one of my friends, he has a really good surround sound system. We're watching First Contact, and this is one of those new 7.1 surround systems, I guess it was. Anyway, you want to talk about good audio, man. You watch the beginning episode, the beginning portion where the Borg comes in. You want to talk about good audio. Oh, my goodness. I thought it was actually on board the Enterprise.
That would have been so cool to hear that. Wow. Neat.
I had a friend tell me what the Borg looked like, and they said that they were mostly, you know, humanoid, but they had these mechanical things sticking out all over them. It was real interesting, and I tried to get him to give me more details, and he said, no, they're just a combination of organic and metal parts.
Well, I have a figure of a Borg, and what they look like are humans with part of them, half of them is human, like one side of them is human, and then the other side is mechanical, so it's weird looking, and they have a lot of tubes sticking out of them, a lot of wires trailing along them. One eye is artificially like a and it's a really, I guess it's supposed to be really able to see, you know, good through things, and I'm not sure all of its capabilities, but it's an artificial eye, and then you have the human eye. And it's really interesting. And one of their arms is mechanical, and one isn't. So it's quite cool.
You know, it's interesting to note, if you guys ever watch, you guys may not know, there's a little bit of trivia here, but the Borg, when they're born, when they're actually placed in a Borg nursery, they are not born with their implants. The implants are basically integrated into their organic structure. And if I had this is going to be kind of cool. If I had a implant, I think I'd make those. I think I'd make an eye, of course. But I think what I'll also do is have a wireless connection. Probably have like 802.11 connection, and have my brain have like an IP stack so I can natively speak TCP/IP.
Well, you know, with the Borg, one line I remember from the last episode of Star Trek Voyager when they were, you hear the Borg talking, and Janeway is, I guess, talking to the Borg Queen, I think it was, and she says something about, you know, all those voices talking, I don't know how you can stand it. You must really get a lot of headaches. Yep.
Yeah, that queen was something else. I never did figure out what happened to her in the end of the last episode. Did she get killed?
I'm assuming she was.
You know, it's really fun. You ever watch the episode? I forget what episode it's actually called, though. But there was an episode where apparently she had I think Seven of Nine had a kid, child, or whatever you want to call it, call her or it. And she actually memorized the Borg species designations, and then she was programming the, it's kind of funny because Seven of Nine actually said invalid input, invalid data, ignore it.
Oh, I remember that. That was good. Yeah, there were a couple of episodes in there where she had to actually take care of kids, and she sure screwed that up really good.
Hey guys, this is Tim Kilgore. Just thought I would drop in Love Trek, and I'm wondering if you guys can hear me okay.
We can hear you. You're just you're a bit faint, but we can hear you, yes. And, hi. I think, you know, it's interesting to reflect how Seven, you know, of course she had to deal with children on occasions, and it was interesting to see how she dealt with that because she had never really had a childhood. I mean, up till the age of 4 or 5, and that was it, I think, or something. And then, of course, after that, it was taken over by the Borg, and then she comes back, and so she has to start relearning how to be human, and, so then on top of that, then she gets thrust in these situations where she has to deal with children, and, you know, I think she's quite insecure about it, and she, you know, just deals with it the only way she knows how to, and, of course, she was still learning, and it's just fascinating to see that interaction.
Yeah, well, I know there was that one episode there of, you know, where she's, you know, got the multiple personalities. That was quite the episode in terms of acting. And they really did a good job on that one. You know, I mean, 1 minute, you know, she's herself, and then she's acting, you know, like a Klingon. That was one of my favorite parts of that episode was in that, you know, just sort of, you know, the happening when she suddenly thinks she's a, you know, a Klingon or something like that, and then goes after B'Elanna, you know, B'Elanna Torres. Another episode I really liked was The Haunting of Deck 12. That's the one where they, capture this alien being or something that goes into the computer or something like that. The thing that I remember about that was, you know, like when Seven comes into the one area, wherever it is, where this crewman is, you know, she's got this real command presence, I guess. You know, the way she speaks, like, you know, crewman Solus, step away from the control panel. Well, what have I done? You know, appears you caused a power failure in astrometrics, or something like that, you know. That's what I clearly remember about that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that multiple personality episode. I mean, like you said, it was just a complete change. When she was that Klingon, oh, that was just, oh, that was terrible. Oh, dear. Oh, my. And then when she was that, I think she was a little kid, yeah, because then she was playing what's her name? Naomi Wildman, and she was playing with her, and it was, you know, it was just fascinating to see that. And I liked that one as well.
On that DVD where they had that episode, there was, or at least in the end of that series, I think, they had the actual actress, I forget what her name is, and she said that it was really a challenge to play Seven, because of the way Seven's voice had to be and the way that Seven had to move around and do things and stuff. Because, you know, the actress herself is purely human and animated and lively and fun, and to be that serious and know you're going to have to go in and do that character, you know, and actually work at it for months, that must have been a real, real challenge. But she was really, really good. And the Seven character, I think they did a really good job developing her. But as I said earlier, I think they, the very last episode of the show, I think they could have and should have made her a little more alive or something, shown her to be a little more human. But then that's just me thinking out loud, I guess.
You know, it's really fun. I remember one episode. Do you guys remember the episode where apparently, I forget who she's going to make love to, but it's kind of funny. I mean, and you see, Seven of Nine, she's incredibly intelligent, but when she tried to make love to the guy, he was like, whoa, 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 what are you trying to do here? Whoa. Chill out, man.
Yeah, she is so innocent in some ways. Like you said, she's really intelligent, extremely intelligent. But in social aspects and things, she's so innocent, and it's almost kind of I don't know, sad to see her trying to, you know, get this social thing, and the doctor's all trying to help her, and she tries so hard, and that's quite touching, I think.
It is. And, you know, she adapts very quickly, too. There was the one episode there in, I think it was season 6 of Voyager, where the doctor was, I guess, I don't know about an opera singer, but something like that, a virtuoso, I think was the name of the episode. And there was this one part where, you know, he says he wants to, you know, leave the Voyager and go and pursue this career or something like that. And of course, you know, when he goes to say goodbye to Seven, you know, she's all upset and everything, and I guess tries to make the doctor stay, and eventually, you know, she says at the end, she said, well, you better get going, you don't want to keep your fans waiting or something. Again, this real tone of, you know, I don't really know how to describe it, but, you know.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what, speaking of, you know, I thought, you know, it would make a really good couple. Imagine if either Tuvok or Seven of Nine went out, or Taurus or Seven of Nine. Yeah, Tuvok, yeah, they make an interesting couple. Can you imagine those two? They go nuts.
Tuvok and Taurus. I don't know. It would be interesting, but, man, I think there would be some strange situations going on if those two got together. Ha, ha, ha. Ah, Mr. Logic and Miss Klingon. Wow.
Miss Volatile.
Oh, you know what's really funny? What's really funny is the fact that, you ever seen Seven of Nine get pissed? I'll tell you what, when she gets pissed, I'll tell you what, you better go. I would not want to get her pissed, because I think I'd have a little problem.
Yeah, and I think especially towards the end, Seven of Nine's character could have been developed a lot more, because in the last episode of Voyager, the doctor mentions that he can remove something or do something to give her emotions, and so she can laugh and do all the other things that regular people do. So I think if they were to ever if they would have continued the series, I think they would have had a lot more potential for her character to have been developed a lot further than it was, than we saw throughout the seasons 4 through 7.
I also wish that they would have developed Tuvok's character a little more too, because he kind of always seemed lonely. I mean, he didn't, I don't know why I even, I, because he just, he, well, he was just, seemed like he didn't have really, he was connected to the crew, but he never really seemed to socialize with anybody on, you know, on a relaxed basis. It was always mostly professional, except, of course, for Neelix, who would always, you know, tease him and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're right. There were times I really felt sorry for Tuvok. And speaking of Neelix, I kind of was sad when he went off and got married, and true, he had to go be with his people and stuff. I wanted him to actually go to Earth with everybody else, because he was there the whole time, you know? I just really missed him the last episode. I really got fond of Neelix. I thought he was so nice.
Oh, he was a great character, and you're right. He fit with the crew, and to have him leave before it ended, it was just sort of like, oh, dear, you know, it was sad. I mean, of course, it fit well with the storyline, and it made sense, but it was too bad.
Yeah, and I was going through one time my Deep Space Nine episodes to try to find a particular episode, and I could have sworn that I saw an episode of Deep Space Nine that had Tuvok in it, or at least the actor that played him, and I don't remember which one it is. Maybe it's just my imagination, but I listened to all the episodes again, and I can't seem to find that one, so maybe I just imagined it. If anybody has any idea which episode I might mean.
You know, you're probably right, because in The Next Generation, there is the person that plays Tom Paris on Voyager. He is in The Next Generation, of course, playing a different character. And so that was interesting.
Yeah, you know, Deep Space Nine, I think, had to be one of my favorite series, because they just had a really neat bunch of characters kind of mixed in. I mean, it was real interesting. Of course, that whole environment was totally different because it was a space station. But they had a lot of people sort of coming and going, and of course, you know, Quark was a character who always, I guess he just never quite grew out of his Ferengi character. But I found it real interesting that his nephew ended up going off to Starfleet Academy. And that was real interesting. Totally out of Ferengi character.
I really like Odo in Deep Space Nine. I don't really know much about him other than he's a shapeshifter, but I like, you know, the way he's just pestering Quark all the time. You know, and then Quark's always like, you know, what were you disguised as this time, you shapeshifter, or whatever. That sort of thing.
Oh, yes, I love Odo. He's so funny. He's always getting Quark in trouble and stuff, and it's great. And he also, you know, he was also sort of an, not being humanoid by nature, he too had to learn about humans and humanoids, basically, and why, you know, why do you people do the strange things you do? And he just was, you know, sometimes baffled by it.
Yeah, he was really funny. You know, without really being intending to be funny, he was funny. And it was kind of strange how he ended up going back to his people, because I never thought that would happen. Boy, I'll tell you what, considering when he found out what kind of people his people were.
That was weird. I know it. I don't understand that. Especially when he finally got his relationship worked out with Kira, and then he just sort of leaves. That was lame. And then Sisko, you know, goes off with these, you know, Bajoran prophets, and his wife is, you know, going to have a baby, and he just sort of, you know, leaves, and that was kind of odd.
I guess I haven't gotten that far in the series, really, to remember those episodes, so, but, one thing I found really disappointing was in, Voyager, getting back to that for a moment, in the episode, there was one, 30 Days, where Tom Paris, he's reduced from, you know, lieutenant to ensign. I was a little disappointed in that, although I understand, you know, why it would, you know, happen. You know, you violate the rules is what happens to you.
Yeah, and I also think at the end, there's still a lot of open-endedness, because, I mean, at the very end of DS9, Odo goes off and joins the Great Link. Sisko basically joins the wormhole aliens. And so I think there's a lot of potential for them to kind of play around with those characters if they ever wanted to make another series, because, okay, so Odo goes off and joins the Great Link. What happens next? Does he come back? Does he stay there? And with Sisko, they kind of hinted with his character that he could kind of go anywhere in time or space that he wanted, so they could do a lot more with him, I think.
Yeah, and also at the end of Voyager, I was disappointed sort of on how it ended, where they just sort of arrived on Earth, and that was it. I mean, it was... I kind of wish they would have, you know, maybe showed somehow them, each one of them, just a short part of each one going home or something. Because that would have been kind of interesting. I mean, of course, that's another open end, you know, for Voyager as well, because they could basically do anything or go anywhere.
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing, because you would have thought that was the whole point of the series, is to get everybody to go home. You know, and you would have thought they would have just had maybe about 20 minutes at the end where it showed, you know, how Janeway went to wherever she went and all the other different people went where they went. And there's episodes of that whole series that are kind of disappointing, like the one where they ran into the dinosaurs who had actually evolved on Earth, and then they left the Earth, and it turned out in the end where the dinosaur queen or whatever she was kicked them out and said she didn't want to see any of them ever again, any of the Enterprise people ever again. I kind of would have liked that to have a little more satisfying ending, I guess, because I don't know. I thought it was kind of neat the way that it started out, that the professor discovered that, yes, they were actually related to humans.
Is that pretty well as the concept pretty much of Deep Space, the fact that as far as with the characters getting to travel into space and time? The reason that I'm asking is because I really, although I've heard the Star Treks, you know, I've really been confused at the concepts of each series. For instance, Deep Space. What was really the main concept of Deep Space Nine? Is anybody going to, someone kind of fill me in on that?
I think, this is just my opinion, but I think Deep Space Nine, sort of is a, the Bajorans, you know, having been ruled by Cardassia, are now trying to get back their identities and to make it on their own. And I think it's a sort of a struggle both, you know, with themselves outwardly, where they're trying to fix their, you know, their planet, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to rebuild their government and their world, and also, and then emotionally, where they're trying to get move on from the terrible things that they have endured. And so I think a lot of that, the characters help that along. And I don't know, each one has their own, of course, past, and but the intention of Bajor was for them to become a member of the Federation, which was not realized by the end of the series, of course.
Yeah, and I think the point of Star Trek Voyager was just everybody trying to get home from the other side of the galaxy, and all the adventures that they had on the way to getting back to Earth or back to their planet, whatever. That was the point of that series, but there was a lot of stuff that went on. And, of course, the point of Enterprise is to kind of lead up to the Star Trek original series, and you get a sense of history of how things happened, how things started. And with Star Trek Enterprise, a lot of the computer stuff, they don't have the automatic talking computer that does everything for you. The people actually have computers sort of like what they have now, but they've got, you know, they actually have to start pushing buttons and typing things and stuff. They don't have computers that do everything for them. So it's kind of a lead up to the Star Trek original series. And then Next Generation is kind of continuation a few hundred years later.
Yeah, and I also think that in Voyager, a lot of it too was how Captain Janeway made that decision to, you know, to destroy that array that made it so they couldn't return home. She made that decision for everyone. And in the first, you know, and in the first season of that, a lot was made of that. A lot of people, a lot of crew people were angry about that, you know. And then in later episodes, she blames herself, you know. She says, you know, I made that decision for everybody. So, you know, not only am I not able to go home, but everyone else isn't either. And it was because of one decision that I made for everyone else. And I like that, kind of that idea.
One thing that has always fascinated me about, you know, Star Trek was the holodeck. How you could just go into that place and then have these images or whatever come to life, you know, certain settings or something. I mean, with Captain Picard and his, Dixon Hill scenario, and or on Voyager, where, you know, Tom Paris is acting out Captain Proton. That was pretty neat. But, you know, of course, there were some, you know, dangerous things there, too, you know, on the holodeck. I mean, the one episode, and this sort of goes back to when, you know, they destroy the array, where they're having the, I don't know if I should really say this since it's a spoiler, but oh well. But anyway, when Tuvok, you know, programs the holodeck in case there's, with a training scenario, I guess, for if the Maquis decide to rebel against the, Starfleet crew and whatnot, and then him and Tom, they get, you know, they're trapped on the holodeck and everything. Whoa, yikes. That's all I can really say about that.
Oh, that was an intense episode. That was so cool. That was so funny, too, because Tuvok was kind of embarrassed about it, and then, of course, you know, Tom Paris says he's going to finish the story then, and then Tuvok kind of wants to take it back, and it's like, that was kind of funny. And I love the holodeck. That is a fascinating thing. Can you imagine having one of those? I could just see all these people quitting their jobs, losing their jobs, and locking themselves away in this fantasy world. It would be really strange. And that was a really fascinating concept for them to come up with.
Yeah, you know, another episode I just got thinking about there, you know, we're dealing with the dangers of technology, was the one in season 7, you know, they have the Hirogen, you know, those hunter aliens, I guess, where they would, you know, stalk their prey or whatever. There was this one episode in there, Flesh and Blood, that was a scary one. Well, you know, I mean, when you consider, these Hirogen, they're programming all these holograms, and then they learn to adapt and everything like that. Yikes. I tell you, the dangers of technology.
Oh, yeah, that was a freaky one. Holy cow, yeah. Wow. They should have left well enough alone. Yeah, that was a good one. And there was also a funny one, a funny part on this one episode. I can't even remember what it was. And I guess they have to ration the holodeck on Voyager somehow. I don't really know how that works. But so Tom Paris and Harry Kim are playing this Captain Proton thing, and so the doctor comes in and says, okay, you know, now it's my time to have the holodeck, and I'm going to need it now. And of course, you know, they protest and say, you know, hey, we're in here trying to, you know, finish the story. Don't you want us to save the universe and all that? And the doctor says, no, I want to sing my little opera thing. And he's just like, you've had it this whole time now. It's my turn. And it was just so funny because they kind of got in this argument about it. It was so funny.
They've had some really funny lighter episodes, you know, to kind of counteract the heavy technology. And in Enterprise, they have one where Henry Tucker goes down to this alien planet. No, it's not a planet. It's a starship. And it's in the first series of Enterprise. He goes to this starship and gets along with these aliens really well because he's fixing some of their engines and stuff. And he comes back to a ship and finds out that he is pregnant with one of the aliens' children. And the Klingons find out about it, and they start to laugh at him, which is really funny. But of course, he ends up going back to the alien ship, and they take the child off of, I think it's actually growing on him or something. They take the child off of him and realize that, you know, it's kind of unusual for interspecies pregnancies, whatever. But it was funny because he was just a perfect gentleman. I guess just being around these aliens exposed him to their reproduction or something. But it was funny when the Klingons found out that here he was pregnant with these aliens' children, and the captain of the Klingon ship is communicating with the Enterprise, and he's just laughing and laughing and laughing.
Are they ending Enterprise? I heard something about, like, this last season was the last one, and do you guys know where they're going to, what they're going to go to now? Because, you know, they've done almost every era that they can. Do you guys know what's going on with that?
Well, I hadn't heard anything. Last thing I heard was that they canceled Enterprise, and it was just really sad that they did. But they had to really work on, I'm not to the fourth season yet, but they had to really work on tying up the ends and making sure that everything kind of gelled along with the original series so that everything kind of meshed together so you could go directly from Enterprise to the original series, you know, historically. But, yeah, it would be real interesting to find out what they're going to do next. They really need to make another Star Trek movie because they're long overdue for that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to maybe make, if they do another series, I wonder if they're going to maybe try to have it, you know, at a future time, you know, I mean, maybe after the 24th century or something, if they are thinking of doing that.
Yeah, they could, you know, it could be like past Voyager, you know, past that time, and, that'd be cool to see what they come up with, and what would really be interesting is to see some really cool alliances, like, and some other people in Starfleet. Like, what if we saw, I mean, I know that Worf is a Klingon and he's in Starfleet, but he's sort of the exception to the rule. I mean, what if we saw some Romulans, you know, in positions of command and so forth, and you know, of course, Nog is kind of keeping that going as a Ferengi. He would probably be the first Ferengi in Starfleet. But it would really be cool to see some of these who have been currently enemies to the Federation, to see them actually serving on a ship.
Wouldn't it be fun seeing Nog as a captain of the ship going around trying to make deals with all these aliens? That would be funny.
Holy cow. Oh, man. Yeah, that would be so funny.
I think it'd be neat to see a confrontation between the Borg versus the Dominion, because two very powerful factions going up against each other, I think that'd be something cool to see. How they would work that into shows or an episode, I don't know. But just something neat to point out.
How about more than one episode of that? If they can't fit it into one show, try what would happen if they had it in, you know, maybe multiple episodes, saying, well, the battle was not resolved in the first, and so you can see these extra ones that you see them still battling as they still continue to try to fight the battle.
Well, they could turn that into a movie real easy.
Well, also, you got a couple of paths, too. You have Enterprise B, which no one has touched, which is crazy because some of the books are incredible. And then you have Riker on the Titan, and that would be, you know, just an interesting thing to see. You know, are they going to actually figure out transwarp, which they played with in Star Trek 4, well, not 4, 3 a little bit. Are they going to be able to go to more parts of the galaxy, that kind of thing? It'd be interesting, just the whole exploration bit.
Yeah, and also, I think it'd be neat if they'd make some kind of a movie where, with the crew of Voyager, where it's a future time, and they have to, I don't know, go back to the Delta Quadrant and become allies, like Species 8472 would join the Federation and help the Federation defeat both the Borg and the Dominion, which are trying to kind of take over the whole galaxy instead of on a quadrant-by-quadrant basis. Maybe they could make it on a more global scale.
Yeah, and then they could have the Talaxians be mediators.
Now, do you guys know, I don't remember, because I didn't watch the last season much or the last episodes. How did they actually, the Voyager crew, how did they actually get back Because I've kind of forgotten. I'm kind of vague on those details.
Well, actually, how they got back was in the beginning of, I think it's called Endgame Parts 1 and 2. In the beginning, they kind of skipped forward to a future time where they were already home. And they had a big reunion and things. And Captain Janeway, who was in the future time an admiral, went to the Klingons to get some kind of time device so she could go back in time to the Voyager in the Delta Quadrant. And she gave the Voyager in the past in the Delta Quadrant new technology. And they had to get past the Borg. And so Admiral Janeway kind of helped her past self to get home. It's kind of confusing, but it worked.
Yeah, what's really weird is it's such a weird paradox, because if Janeway hadn't got home, reached home, she wouldn't have, her future self wouldn't have been able to get that time device that would go back into the past to help them reach home. So it's really quite a something to try to wrap your mind around.
I'm surprised Starfleet actually let them do that, because under normal circumstances, playing with time like that was something that one did not do. Oh, and by the way, how are my levels now? I should turn my mic up a little bit.
Actually, Starfleet did try to stop Admiral Janeway from doing that. They sent, I think it was Harry Kim. They sent him after her, and he tried to convince her, but she said no, and she went to the past anyway. So yeah, they tried to stop her, but it didn't work.
That must be some challenge, you know, the way that, Janeway, you know, she had to play, you know, herself, you know, like that, and in a few episodes, even one in season two, I believe. You know, it must be hard trying to do that, you know, when you're having a conversation with your other, you know, yourself there. That must take a little bit of work in terms of all the costumes or anything they have to come out with, you know. Or, I don't know how they would do it, but...
I actually listened to one of the documentaries on the DVDs, and there was this one episode of Voyager where the Doctor has to go to the Alpha Quadrant. They send him there to cure his creator of some disease that he had. And they said in the documentary that, well, the actor for the Doctor's, the holographic Doctor's creator, and the actor who played the Doctor on Voyager are both the same actor. So whenever they would have conversations between the Doctor and his creator, Louis Zimmerman, his character, there'd be a lot of costume changing and different stuff. So yeah, I imagine those scenes probably took days or maybe weeks or months to produce because of all the changes in costume and things like that.
Yeah, that was an interesting episode there. You know, when they had Deanna Troi on there, and she was actually one of my favorite characters from the Next Generation. I think I sort of got into that series because of her. You know, the way she could, you know, read people's minds and whatnot. You know, for, you know, the counseling. I thought that was impressive. But it was great. You know, when, you know, the Doctor and, well, both of them really are having, you know, the you know, argument, you know, like where the Doctor says, you know, I'm your creation, you know, and he's like, I don't care, I don't need your help or something. And then the, you know, Troi, she just, you know, almost throws up her hands in frustration, you know. That part I thought was kind of funny in a way.
What was the thing with Q? And also, where did you guys get the DVDs? Where do you find them?
Well, I imagine the DVDs, you can get them from, you know, Amazon.com or your local store, something like that. But I don't. What did you want to know about Q?
I actually got the DVDs. I rented them from Netflix, and then I used DVD audio extractor to extract all the audio and make all the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager episodes, plus movies, Star Trek movies 1 through 8, into MP3s, and store them on an extra hard drive. So that's how I got my collection of the TV shows and the movies.
Yeah, we need to put in a clip, uh, you know, little ad for Netflix. They really are a wonderful service. I've listened to all of Star Trek stuff, starting with TNG, Next Generation, through Netflix, and just they never missed an episode. It was just amazing. Of course, you know, you have to kind of put them all in the right order in the queue when you order them, otherwise you're going to mess it up. But they're really an excellent service. If you can't afford to buy the DVDs, and they're very, very expensive, Netflix is the way to go. And then, of course, you could, if you want to, you know, convert them to MP3s. And that DVD auto extractor is a good program. I've used it for some DVDs that I hadn't been able to access the extras from. And it'll go in there and just, you know, convert them for you. It's really nice.
Yeah, and actually what I did was, maybe to help some people out with their numbering system, on the Star Trek episode DVDs, there's usually 4 episodes per disc, and there's 7 discs per season. So if I would put a disc in and it would say TNG S1D2, I would generally know to extract the files into the Season 1 folder. And I had a numbering system where episode 1 was 1.mp3 and so on. So disc 2 would have been 5.mp3 through 8.mp3. So that's how my little numbering system kind of works there for that.
Now that's not Netflix. That's NETFLIX, right?
Yeah, you can either write it that way or NETFLICKS. Either way, you'll get you there.
Oh, wow, good. So you don't buy them, you just rent them. Is that how that works?
Yeah, you can rent. They have a couple of plans where you can determine how many you want to rent at a time. And the best way to go with them is unlimited rentals per month. What I do is I get 3 of them at a time, and I rent, I think it's like $19.95 a month for unlimited. So usually there's a Netflix outlet real close to where most people live, and you can drop it in the mailbox real easy, and it gets to them the next day, and they ship on the same day that they get it. So the second day after you ship the one back or whatever, then they'll send you a replacement one, you know, with the next one. Or they'll replace if you get a broken one. Like, I got a lot of broken Voyager ones. I think everybody was listening to, watching Voyager, and I got ones that were just broken right in half. And I went online and filled out the form that said, this is damaged and I want a replacement. And they replace it before you even send the broken one back to them.
Yeah, I got a lot of broken ones, too, and it kind of frustrated me because the Netflix plan that I chose was the unlimited 8 at a time. That was about for $50 a month, I think. So I'd usually get 8 discs, 8 discs in a grouping, kind of. And I just take the discs and convert them, send them back, and they'd send me more. Convert them, send them back. And I started this last October, and I think I just finished up my collection in the past month or two, so it really didn't take that long.
I'll have to see if they have this service available in Canada. I kind of doubt it, but I don't know. It was luck, I guess. Anyway, I guess I'm going to get out of here, but this has been a lot of fun. I hope there will be another chat session like this. This is good.
Yeah, it's definitely educational, and for someone like myself who's definitely curious to know about these things, it's very interesting. Away from the DVDs and the DVD audio extractor and the Netflix and everything else, back to the movie itself. How often? I mean, first of all, what was the whole purpose of the group split, of some of those groups splitting in the first place toward that final episode? Did they just see something they liked that caused them to split between each other, or what happened there?
Which series are you talking about?
I'm talking about toward the very end that y'all were talking about, a couple of them that had left, or something like that, I cannot remember the names, and of course, it's one thing, when I'm given a bunch of information like this, I can't remember it all, but the names, you'd mentioned of a couple of characters that had left, they went to different groups. I think this was towards the last episode that they did of Star Trek altogether, on Deep Space, I think. It may have been Deep Space, Excuse me. I'm thinking. Is that not right? That one where they started splitting in some places. We had the guy that left before the end of the episode. What was the whole purpose?
Oh, yeah. You mean Deep Space Nine? I think where I mentioned that Odo went off and joined the Great Link, and Sisko went with the wormhole aliens, and some of the different other the other characters kind of split off. I guess the purpose of that was just to kind of wrap things up, but I think also the other purpose might have been so they could kind of leave some open-endedness so that if another writer wanted to come in and use those characters, they would have something to go on based on the last episode. So they could kind of take what happened to those characters in the last episode and kind of build on that. Like, I don't know, they could make Odo come back to Deep Space Nine, or they could expand on the idea of the Ferengi and Starfleet, just things such as that.
Yeah, Voyager was kind of the same thing, where Neelix kind of went off and went to his people, and the Enterprise, most of the Enterprise people ended up going home, and I don't know, there were a couple of other things that happened in there. But it would probably help you if you saw the episodes so that you could understand more what we're talking about, because if you haven't seen them, then this is kind of like a foreign language for you.
Yeah, it makes more sense if you see the episodes and see that in context, the events kind of surrounding everyone, those different characters leaving to different areas, and then you'll get more a bit of a feel for their reasons, and maybe also for the writer's reasons, and then you'll sort of be able to make your own judgment on that as well.
How about the fanfics? I heard somebody say something about fanfics and the ability of a creativity of a writer who might write a fanfic of those things. To maybe do something a little creative. My guess is, obviously, they'd have to know the concept of what they were writing about, would they not be able to do it. However, as far as me seeing the episodes, for me, due to a couple of medical issues, one thing that's very difficult for me to do is to easily catch on and when it comes to movies. I've noticed, and this is in the case with me in everyday life even, sometimes when someone explains a concept sometimes to me, I don't grip it as easy sometimes. And in movies, it's very complicated, I've noticed, for me to grab the concept, which is why I ask the questions I do, because particularly when you got, as you were talking about before, there's a lot of these things that's very interesting. I want to... Now, maybe not to get too far off topic, but does anybody think that the game Trek 2000 put out by GMA Games, is that anywhere, do we think, on the scope? Does it seem like it maybe catches just a partial bit of the theme of the Star Trek series itself?
I've never played that game. Of course, as I said earlier, there is a review on that at... on the American Foundation for the Blind website, American Council for the Blind. And also, with the Star Trek episodes, if you were able to get a hold of some of those, you could watch them at your own pace. They're an hour, well, I guess if you leave out the commercials, I don't know, what, 45, 50 minutes long. And you could just watch, the episodes at your own speed, and so there wouldn't be like a rush to try and take it all in as a movie. And it is the same thing with a movie; you could still watch that in little bits as well. I'm not sure if that would help, but We certainly don't mind answering questions either. So.
And a lot of the plot developments, especially in Deep Space Nine, it can get pretty complicated. It surprised me that they kind of brought in Ezri Dax in the seventh season, and they only she was kind of only there for the seventh season, and I thought, I don't know, maybe they could do something more with her, because they have Jadzia for the first six seasons, then they bring in this new person for only one season, and it's like, okay, where does she go after that?
I'm sorry, but I do not really... I guess it was because I got used to Jadzia, but I don't know. Ezri just, I couldn't connect with her somehow. I wish that the actress would have stayed for the last season, Jadzia's, who played Jadzia, because, I don't know, I couldn't get used to Ezri for some reason.
Yeah, I couldn't get used to her either. I mean, Dax is Dax, and I always thought of Jadzia as being Dax, and it would have made sense to just keep that actress. And it was sad the way that ended, because she and Worf, if I remember correctly, were married, and she died, and he was just devastated when that happened. That was so sad.
Oh, that was just so sad. I mean, gee, he was married before to Kalar, and she died, and then he gets married to Jadzia, and she dies. I mean, it's just sort of sad. I wish she would have stayed.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm confused about is, I think it's in the beginning of Season 7, where Captain Sisko goes to this planet to dig up some orb to release the wormhole aliens and actually bring the wormhole back. And this also kind of connects in with another episode that I'm a bit confused about, where something happens to Captain Sisko and he's either transported back in time or he has a dream where he's actually in this other reality and he's a writer for a newspaper. And he writes about Deep Space Nine. And in the episode, there's all this conflict about, well, should black people go into space, and all these different kind of topics. And then in this other episode, in Season 7, when he's on the shuttle, he hears this voice that says, Doctor, I don't remember the doctor's name, but Doctor so-and-so, report to Isolation Ward 4. And he doesn't know where it's coming from. And then when he's digging up this orb or painting or whatever it is, I'm not exactly sure what it is. I think it's an orb. But they switch back to when his character's a writer, and I think it's like the 1920s or 30s or maybe 40s, probably 20s or 30s when he's a writer and writing about Deep Space Nine. And I guess this alternate character played by the same actor is in a mental hospital because I guess he got carried away with really writing these stories about Deep Space Nine. And when he says that he has to get rid of the stories or cover them up or something, Benjamin Sisko, Captain Sisko, actually I think tries to recover or to cover up what he dug in the sand to go along with what Benjamin is writing in the 1920s. I don't get that. How did that actually happen? How could he write about Deep Space Nine and then Deep Space Nine actually happen? Or is Deep Space Nine just a figment of this writer's imagination and this whole universe that he created really isn't real, but it's just some fictional story in a magazine made by some black person in the 1920s or 30s.
Well, I know that Ira Bear, the writer or whatever of Deep Space Nine, wanted to end the series with Benny, writing the story and saying that Deep Space Nine was a fictional story. It never existed except in Benny's imagination. But he was never able to get that far. I don't know why, of course. Obviously, it didn't end that way. But I think that he was in some sort of dream state. I don't think that he was in... I mean, it is weird, that part where he was, like, digging in the sand, trying to cover up that orb, because that's what that was an orb. And we already know that Bajoran orbs have certain properties, different ones, like time travel and other things. So I think that orb made him have some sort of dream that he was Benny in the 1920s or something. That's just a guess, though.
That's what I was thinking, too, was that probably he was looking into that orb and it was putting him in an alternate reality state, but the reality sort of touched at a certain level so that one knew about the other at a certain consciousness level. Because, you know, that's consistent with the Bajoran philosophy.
Well, everyone, I'm going to have to go, but it was wonderful chatting with you all, and I really hope we can have another Star Trek chat, because it's just been great, and I've really enjoyed it. So, everyone have a good night.
Yeah, I think it's about to wind this up. And, Jamie, you have a really good week, and the rest of you guys also. And I'm going to turn off the recording, and unless anybody else has anything they want to say, of course, I said that about an hour and a half ago. But anyway, yeah, if you guys have anything more to say, then just go ahead and say it now, and then we'll just end it. Because we've been going for a long time.
Yeah, it was interesting about the... I wonder if there's ever going to be a series that's based on Star Trek anymore. Or are we kind of done for a while? I always wondered that.